There wasn't anything funny about what happened to Lincoln Hall on Mount Everest. At the age of 50, 22 years after he was part of Australia's first attempt to climb Everest, he died just after he reached the summit. Or at least everyone thought he did, and his body was left on the mountain. And then, miraculously, his fellow climbers found him, still alive, the next morning. A story he tells in his book, Dead Lucky.
Well, what happened was we spent 20 minutes on the summit because I knew that the summit's halfway, and only 100 feet or so, 200 feet below the summit, I was stricken with cerebral edema. Now, cerebral edema is fluid retention within your skull. It puts pressure on your brain and basically kills you. And basically what happened to me was I passed out from a tremendous sense of lethargy. I just seemed to have no energy. I've actually rescued someone with cerebral edema from much lower height, but the way he responded to the edema was he just wanted to sit and mutter nonsense in the snow. And my friend and I tried to carry him like a drunk man you're trying to put into his car or into the gutter or wherever you want to put him. I mean, it's very hard to carry someone who doesn't want to be carried. So that was my experience of cerebral edema. But I actually don't remember this phase. But what I wanted to do was I actually wanted to go back up the mountain. Apparently there were three black women up there I wanted to visit. And I wanted to jump off the Kanchung face, which is, it's 9,000-foot drop. I mean, 22 years, I'm not coming back. Here's my only chance. And that sounds crazy. And of course, it is crazy. There was an Indian climber who a couple of weeks earlier had actually jumped off the Kanchung face. And who knows where that came from. So the Sherpas, luckily, that I was with, they were able to get a rope on me and pull me down like a bull that doesn't want to be castrated, and stop me jumping off the face. But the problem with that is that, I sort of made sure I had enough juice in my system to get down to a lower camp so I'd be able to get off the mountain. But all this craziness, all this energy I wasted meant that I only got down, the summit's 29,035 feet, I only got down to 28,000 feet. And then I could move no more. And it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon and Pemba was saying, Lincoln, you're going to have to spend the night here. And I wanted to tell him that, look, I've been in this situation before where I've exhausted and I can't move. So what I've done in the past is I go down, I have a rest, I go down 100 feet, 200 feet, have another rest, and then maybe 200, 300 feet the next time, have another rest. I was going to tell Pemba that's what I wanted to do. But unfortunately, I couldn't even speak, so I never gave that message to Pemba.
So you were actually aware. Now, what's the rule at this point? He has to think about himself and the other two Sherpas. If you're fighting, if you won't go, what does he do? Try to revive you, try to pull you, and then just say goodbye?
Well, actually, Pemba had come up. There were the three Sherpas I was with, and Pemba had come up because actually another one of our party had died, and so he no longer needed Pemba's services. So the expedition leader suggested that Pemba climb back up to where I was. So I had four Sherpas with me. But Pemba was totally exhausted from what he'd gone through. And I'd actually injured him accidentally by kicking him. And I didn't even realize I'd hurt him until afterwards. But anyway, and he was snowblind. So Dorji, one of the Sherpas, went down with Pemba. Two other Sherpas stayed with me. And they noticed, they were trying to, I was showing no signs of life, so they're desperately trying to find signs of life, but they couldn't find a, there was no pulse, there was no breathing. One of them poked me in the eye, there was no response, so.
So you were dead?
Well, yeah, yes, that's what they concluded, and the expedition leader, 2 hours after I was just lying there, ordered them to come down to save themselves.
Now, it's worth mentioning that they went down, reluctantly, I'm sure, but they reasonably should informed the world that you were not coming back.
That's right.
What do you remember of that time? Anything at all?
I remember really enjoying the sunset. And usually you don't get when you're on a mountain and you're not at your camp, you don't really enjoy the sunset when it's setting because you just got to get out of there. Yeah. But I wasn't really in the present or in the past. But then I started to have some hallucinations. I remember this sort of being like when you have suddenly you switch on your noise reduction headphones when you're in an aeroplane, suddenly it's silent. And that's how it sort of felt when I died, I think. But then, of course, there was a blank time, but there was some spark in me somewhere that tweaked my brain to start working and I started having hallucinations. So there was an incomplete picture, so the wrong files appeared. So I found myself in strange places. But each of the hallucinations had an element of hope and had an element of, there was a message to just stay put. And actually what happened in the middle of the night, suddenly out of nowhere, I was totally lucid. And just as well, I hadn't moved in my hallucinations because I could feel this huge, really freezing swirling wind, which meant there was a huge precipice nearby, when in fact there were two huge precipices. But yeah, and that's then I realized I had frostbitten fingers, that, you know, hypothermia, hypoxia. I wasn't aware about the cerebral edema, but that had certainly drained me. Yeah. And I just realized that I was going to die.
That's a funny question to ask. Did it bother you?
Well, it didn't initially because, well, that sounds a bit strange.
No, I don't think it does. I think that you were in such a state that life or death was not the primary concern, actually.
Yeah. There was an incredible welcoming sense in just going into a hypoxic or hypothermic sort of state of just relaxing and then just drifting off and never drifting back again. But, I won't say unfortunately, because all is well that ends well, but then I remembered my family, and that was the driver that made me think, no, well, I'm not going to die now. I can't die. I've got to come home. I've turned back so many times. I'm not going to have made that a waste of time to go and die now. No, my thoughts weren't quite that logical, but the whole thing was that I had to get down. Now, it seemed like a totally hopeless situation, and, it was a place without hope, so...
Yeah, you had no reason to believe that they were going to come back up and find you. I mean, you should have been dead when they finally did get there.
Yes, that's right.
What time was it the next day when they found you? Do you remember them coming to you?
Well, it was first light of dawn, yes. Initially, I remember being alone. Hallucination sort of led me to the top, not to the top, but back to that spot where I actually really was. And I think it was their arrival that brought me into that point, as well as the hallucination ending. The hallucination was interrupted by the reality of their arrival. And there were four of them. There was Dan Mazur, Andrew Brash, Miles Osborne, and Jangbu Sherpa on their way to the summit. Another perfect day, maybe 3 hours of climbing till they got there. And then they find me. They'd been told to expect my body, and instead they found me sitting there talking to them.
It's extraordinary. And I keep thinking about your family having been told you were dead at this point, and it's, 12 hours later?
Yes, that's right. They were actually told the previous night. And it was actually 20 hours later that it was confirmed that I was alive, because the reports coming out of base camp from basically cowboys with sat phones and laptops had been inaccurate in all sorts of ways. So you couldn't trust what the news was. And so my friends back in Australia tried to protect my family from false hope. Actually, it turned out not to be false hope. So yes, it was a terrible 20 hours.
We haven't even talked about your coming down. You didn't want to make it the day before. Here you were hours and hours later in even lower energy levels, and somehow you got down. Frostbitten fingers, frostbitten toes?
Well, the process of getting down was quite a simple one, really. Dan Mazur and his team immediately got into action. The book's called Dead Lucky for good reason because, all sorts of things, really. But one of them was, for instance, that Dan was testing in a sort of miniaturized way a new oxygen system, test driving it, and he had his regular one. So, no one carries a spare oxygen set. So, you might have a spare tank, but you don't have spare everything else's. So, that was lucky. So I had oxygen to breathe. They gave me something to drink, which made a huge difference. And then the sun came up, and that made a huge difference as well. They tied me onto the rope that was there, so I wasn't going to slip off. So then the radio conversations back down to our advanced base camp, and the expedition leader sent up some Sherpas who were already on the mountain, dismantling camps, actually. It was right at the end of the season. And those two Sherpas brought oxygen up to me, and with that I was then able to come down. However, Dan, Miles, Andrew and Jangbu no longer had enough oxygen to get to the summit and back safely. So they basically sacrificed their chance of getting to the summit to save my life. And there wasn't even any discussion about it. That was just what they did. That was an extraordinary thing.
Yeah. So was it worth it, all of this?
Was it worth it? Well, I don't think... Sorry, I'm just laughing about certainly the guys who didn't get to the summit didn't think it was worth it. Well, actually, that's not true.
I think they probably did.
Yes, they did, actually.
They were part of something extraordinary.
Yeah, they were. And in fact, Andrew Brash, who's become a very good friend, he just summited Everest last week, actually, which was fantastic. He said exactly that. When I saw him in Calgary last year, I stayed at his house, and he was saying that he thought it was rather cool to be part of this amazing rescue story.
So are you fully recovered? The frostbite wasn't...
Well, the frostbite certainly is. Or isn't, depends how you look at it, meaning that I've got the top joint of all my fingers missing, and my little fingers are little fingers. Yeah, and I lost a whole toe.
But still, you saw the top of the world, you died and you came back. That's extraordinary.
Yes. It was. I mean, in terms of that earlier question of yours, was it worth it? Reaching the summit wasn't worth what I went through, but I guess the insights into the nature of life and death, which is something we haven't even touched upon, were extraordinary for me, and that alone was worth it. And of course, one thing that I would never, ever want to happen again is what my family went through.
Yeah. We haven't talked at all about that. Do you feel as though you have a better understanding of life and death as a result of this?
Well, I do. I'm actually a Buddhist, and I guess what happened, one of the hallucinations was, well, it was a combination of dying and a sort of hallucinatory experience, but I came so close to death. I was so near to death, but I could see that it wasn't the Grim Reaper. It was actually a welcoming presence. And I was in that really privileged position of being able to sort of see that, but to be able to sort of, you know, reject the invitation and say, look, you know, look, I'll be back. Don't worry, I'll be back, but I'm just not ready yet. And that was an extraordinary privilege. So I guess that sort of experience gelled with the Buddhist concept of that life and death is a cycle rather than just an end without a new beginning. And I guess the other thing that was an amazing lesson to me was what I had perceived as reality, what I'd perceived as impossible. The limits to both those things were way, way further back than where I had placed them. So the parameters for the world now, for me, are different, and anything's possible.
That's Lincoln Hall, author of Dead Lucky, Life After Death on Mount Everest.